what's up, everybody? This is the third episode of Brooklyn and Sarasop, where we talk about what it means to be a West Indian / Caribbean American growing up in the United States. I am your host, Raquel Samuel. I'm from Brooklyn, New York. My family is from St. Vincent and the Grenadines. And so this podcast is really about all of our experiences as first and second generation West Indian Caribbean Americans. And specifically for today, we are going to take a little journey away from the West Indies over to the Dominican Republic. And I have two special guests here with me who are going to talk about their specific journeys, their relationship to the DR, and we're going to get into it. So I'm going to pass it along and have my special guests introduce themselves.
Hi, I'm Casaida Gonzalez. Thank you, Raquel, for inviting me to chat with you today. I'm very excited.
Hi, I am Julia Ramirez.
Ooh, Ramirez.
Ooh. Roll that R.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me, Raquel.
No problem. So if you have not already, those who are listening, please make sure, well, first of all, thank you for all the love that you have been showing me and within the last couple of weeks in regards to this podcast. I definitely feel honored because I do hold these stories and our stories to be true. And just all of the love that I've been receiving, I just want to say thanks. Just make sure that when you are listening, you're also liking and subscribing to wherever you are listening to this podcast. And also hit me up on Instagram. My IG is Raquel L. Samuel, so you can just shoot me a DM or shoot me a follow. I definitely want to keep this conversation going. So I wanted to start off with a little quiz. This quiz is titled, How Well Do You Know the Dominican Republic?
Oh, God. Well,
it's not going to be
let's see.
Great.
But I'm just going to say, I'm going to read these questions. There's already reviewed the quiz. There's a lot of words in here that I'm probably not going to pronounce correctly. So
great.
Please forgive me.
You're forgiven.
I hope I don't lose any Dominican friends. I love y'all so much. Please. I am so sorry. Okay.
I may not be able to pronounce it.
This is just to warm us up a bit.
Yeah.
So this does not hopefully take away your DR card.
Well, hopefully not.
No. Question numero uno.
Nice.
Oh, that was good.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool. The most popular sport in the Dominican Republic is?
Baseball. High five.
So I was supposed to read all of the choices, but okay, we're just gonna jump right to it. Cool.
That was an easy one.
Let's see how you do it, number two.
Okay.
A traditional meal of stewed meat, red beans, and rice is regularly served in Dominican households. It's called La Bandera, which means A, the song, B, the circle, C, the flag, D, the delicious stew.
Oh, that's the flag. That's La Bandera.
Yeah, that's the flag, but what's the stew?
Yeah, what's the stew?
Because that sounded like sancocho. La bandera is...
Stewed meat.
It says stewed meat, like red beans, and rice.
Oh, I see.
Carne.
Yeah.
You know.
I thought she was so.
Yeah.
The flag. We need some game show music. Okay, this is the one that I'm going to butcher. I'm going to try it. And I asked Julia earlier if she can help me with this one. I'm going to try it anyway.
I'm ready.
Catedral?
Catedral
de Santa Maria la Menor is the oldest cathedral in the Americas. It survived everything from pirate attacks to earthquakes. It is over A, 500 years old, B, 300 years old, C, 1,000 years old, D, 200 years old.
Over 500?
I'll say 1,000. I'm not sure. I don't know much about catedrales in DR.
You said...
Over 500.
And you said?
1,000.
The answer is A.
What was A?
500.
Oh.
We've been around.
Number four. A special dance style developed in the Dominican Republic. It's a quick dance step. Its quick dance steps are matched by equally fast-paced music. This dance is A, the flamenco, Did I say that right?
Flamenco.
Flamenco or flamenco?
It says flamenco.
Flamenco, yeah,
okay.
That's not it.
B, that's not the it. Tango. No. C, merengue. Yep. D, macarena.
Merengue.
Okay.
Give us a hard one.
Yes. Oh, okay. Well, that cathedral one for me was hard.
Okay, cinco. There's something unusual in the center of the Dominican flag. It is the only independent nation to have a blank on its flag. A, the Bible. B, gecko. C, sword. D, whale.
I think it's the Bible.
It's definitely it's the Bible. Bible.
It's the Bible. They're like super Catholic, religious.
Correct. Number six. Tostones are a popular fried side dish made from local. I actually know the answer to this. A, yuca. B, corn. C, cheese. D, plantains.
Platano.
Correct. All right. Almost there. You guys are doing really well. Seven. Long before its independence, the country was called Santo Domingo after Saint Dominic. Saint Dominic is considered the patron saint of sailors, seamstresses, astronomers, or cheesemakers.
Colonized people?
Yeah.
I don't know that one.
I'm assuming that yet. Sailors, I think.
You say sailors?
I think. I don't know. We were colonized. we were colonized.
I gave my answer. So. Insider is like, they stole the land.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what his name is.
That's a really interesting question to be in a quiz of how well do you know the Dominican Republic.
So Kizaida added a letter E, colonizers. So the answer to that one is A, sailors. Saint of sailors.
Mm-hmm. Sailors who colonized.
I mean,
that's what we're calling them.
Number eight. The Dominican Republic is the only place in the world where the semi-precious stone called blank is found. Wait, can I read the choices?
I know. Oh.
I don't think I know this one.
Oh, ooh. A, Larimar. B, black opal. C, lapis lazuli. D, carnelian.
Can I see those answers in my eyes?
So A, Larimar, B, black opal, C, lapis lazuli, and D, carnelian.
Oh.
I think.
I know what it looks like, but I don't know.
Lapis lazuli.
I don't know the answer to that one. I'm thinking of A, but if I'm not mistaken, isn't that the... I cannot describe. I know that normally they put like insects in it.
Yeah.
And it comes from like tree sap or something like that. And it takes a long time for it to be made.
Like amber?
Amber. Yeah. So I was thinking like amber, but it looks like brownish, yellowish. Yeah. I don't know what it is.
What is your guess?
I'm going to say A.
Okay. And you say
C.
The answer is A.
Oh. Okay.
I didn't know that was called Larimar.
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 Okay, we have two more left.
I knew that was somebody's name. But...
The capital city, Santo Domingo, has a rich history. Founded in blank, it's the oldest European settlement in the Americas. A, 1496 AD, B, 1501 AD, C, 1420 AD, D, 1806 AD.
I'll say 1496.
That's.
I think it's A.
Both say A?
Mm-hmm.
And you are correct.
Woo! Yeah.
All right. Last one. Home run. Here we go. On February 27th, 1844, the Dominican Republic declared its independence from Spain, Haiti, France, Portugal.
Wait, what is it?
1844.
That's the Independence Day that Dominicans celebrate, and it's the one from independence from Haiti.
Yeah.
You are correct.
Yeah.
You guys did awesome. Awesome, awesome,
we're
awesome.
Real Dominicans.
So on this quiz, where did I get it from? It's from childrenofnations.org. Mm. And so 1 to 4 answers correct is still learning, 5 to 7 correct, getting wise, and 8 to 10 correct, expert levels.
I think you got like 2, 3 wrong, so expert levels.
Yay! You are truly Dominican. Your Dominican cards, sounds like, have not been revoked. So congratulations. Wow.
Yeah.
According to the quiz.
According
to everyone else, we may be in the middle.
Yeah. Yeah. Or not.
Or not.
Yeah. Wow, we...
Let's get into it.
Yes. So as I said earlier, we are going to talk about specifically the Dominican Republic, but also what it means to be an American who's from Dominican culture. And I think it's an important conversation that when we talk about the Caribbean and when we talk about West Indies, there's this conversation around colorism and anti-blackness that does not get enough recognition. It doesn't get enough... We don't talk about it a lot. And I think it's important to spend some time, especially in the context of the Dominican Republic, to talk about anti-blackness and colorism, because it's within the history. And even within the last question, the year that the Dominican Republic gained its independence from Haiti, I'm going to assume that that also contributed to a lot of the conversations that we're having today about what it means to be Afro-Latina, Afro-Latinx people. Mm-hmm. I think what's also really interesting, and this is something from my own personal experience with my mom, she's from St. Vincent and the Grenadines, and I remember growing up when she would talk about race, it was always from a standpoint of colorism. It wasn't about black and white. It was more so about light and dark. Mm-hmm. And often when she talked about, like, when white people or white Americans would visit the country, it was just seen as, like, this grand thing. Like, you want to be seen by the white people. You want to take care of the white people. And it's interesting because I think when a lot of Caribbean people come to the States, that's when they receive an introduction into race. And especially as, I think, Afro-Latino people, like, it's like, oh, I'm actually black, because my skin is brown, but I'm also Latinx, right? I'm also Dominican, but can you be both? And I think that's really what this conversation is going to be centered on today. And of course, some other things are going to come up naturally, because the both of you are awesome, intelligent, smart women, and you have a lot to say, and you have your own experiences that I definitely want you to share. So before I begin, as I said, I'm not from the Dominican Republic, so I don't want to take up too much of this conversation. I want to make sure that you two are able to speak. And definitely, also, you're not a representation of the DR. you're not the spokeswomen of the Dominican Republic, right? We're Although not. You beat this quiz, like, you can do this in your sleep.
Yeah. I mean, I also do not want to take the responsibility of speaking for everyone, but yeah. You definitely have some pretty good points that are worth talking about.
For sure. So I do want to just say that moving forward, like, this doesn't represent the ideas of every Dominican person growing up in New York and the United States. Yeah. You know, these are important perspectives, and yeah, there's some commonalities, but yeah. So before I pass it along, I wanted to read this article from theroot.com written by Henry Louis Gates Jr. And he basically, in this article, talks about his trip to the Dominican Republic, and specifically he focuses on Black Dominicans, and his study has been Latin people who are Black. And what does that mean? What does that mean for their culture? How do they see themselves, and how do other people see them? So I'm gonna read some excerpts from the article, because I think it's a great way to frame this conversation, and then we can move from there. So he writes, "Hispaniola is an island divided by two peoples who, to some extent, have shaped their identities in opposition to each other. In fact, the Dominican Republic is the only country in the New World that celebrates its independence from another American country, because for Dominicans, the separation from Haiti in 1844 is their Independence Day." And then he continues to write his journey and being in a cab. And he's in a cab, and the driver asks him why he's in the Dominican Republic. And so he replies, "I told my driver about my project, learning about the Black experience in Latin America, and I asked him about Blackness in the Dominican Republic. He told me amiably that Dominicans don't think of themselves as Black. They call themselves Indio instead, in a reference to the color of their skin, echoing a myth about the extent of their genetic descent from the island's indigenous inhabitants." Wow, you made a face. Yeah. I definitely want to start from there. But first, tell the people about yourself. What's your experience? What's your relationship to the Dominican Republic? Your relationship to this country, being here? And we can start from there. So who wants to go first?
All right, I'll go. So I was born and raised in the Dominican Republic. I lived in the Dominican Republic till I was about 11 years old. So a lot of what was mentioned in those excerpts, I can definitely relate to. And I'll talk a little bit more about that. When I moved to the United States, it was a very eye-opening experience for me, especially with race and just realizing a lot of what I had been living back in the Dominican Republic. Anyways, I've been living here since I was 11, so I've been in the United States for longer than when I've actually lived in the Dominican Republic. So I majored in education, and I am now a school counselor, you know, I guess shedding some light into the issues that affect us on a daily basis. A lot of the times we're easily, you know, just sweeping under the rug. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. Yeah.
I'm first generation, and my relationship with DR is very interesting because I'm always caught in the middle of American versus Dominican. I'm always La Gringa when I go there. I'm always not quite American when I'm here. So I was actually thinking about this the other day, and I have a quick story that makes perfect sense of my experience with DR. So I was born in New York, and for the first 5 years of my life, I was in DR, and I was, you know, just living life. I went to like pre-K there, and then my parents decided to move to Philadelphia for a better life. And then I came a year later with my aunt, and I went from like this very tropical, wonderful place to Philadelphia. North Philadelphia, which I mean, North Philadelphia forever, but like at 5 years old in North Philadelphia in the cold, it was a shock. And so I go up this apartment and I was hungry, and my mom gives me cereal, and it was the first time I've ever eaten cereal with milk. And I remember her saying something along the lines of like, oh, you'll like it because you're American. And that was the first time I was like, I'm not just Dominican. Mm. I'm now American too. And now here's this life. And it was all, I'm reflecting on it because I was five, but I'm reflecting on it now. And I'm like, yes, I'm in the middle all the time. And my relationship with DR is constantly thinking and rethinking and exploring what the Dominican Republic is and what being Dominican is for me.
Thank you for sharing. Thank you both for sharing. Let's get into the center of this conversation. How do you navigate, or how do you describe yourself or perceive yourself in relationship to being, I mean, you touched on this a little bit, Kisaira, about being Dominican and American, but also being within the United States and this dichotomy of Black and white. Mm-hmm. How do you see yourself within that conversation? Where do you feel like you fall?
I think a lot of what Kisaira just mentioned, I also relate to, because coming to the United States at such a young age, like clearly I am Dominican when I arrive here, right? So I'm an immigrant. You're not from here. You're foreign. I didn't know any English. So I was automatically pinpointed as you're not from here when I first moved to the United States. And even ever since I actually came here and have gone back to visit family, it's, well, you're not from here either, right? So there's always that, like, oh, you live somewhere else. You already have another culture within you. You can't necessarily, this gets me every time, but as a woman, as a female going to the Dominican Republic, there's a lot of like femicides in the Dominican Republic, and women are generally looked down upon as the weaker gender. So there's been a lot of just in general, women that have been, what's the word? I can't think of it, but just women have been either assaulted, kidnapped, and then killed. Mm. And there's a lot going on. There's a lot that has been happening. So there's this imminent fear automatically that as a woman going being in the Dominican Republic, something can happen to you. So I can't, every time I go and visit, I cannot go anywhere by myself. I have to be with someone else. Mm-hmm. Even if that means the 7-year-old cousin who I don't know, that I just need to go to the store right around the corner and get something, you have to go with someone. Mm-hmm. Because there's that fear that because you're not from over there, you're automatically going to be, well, at least for me, because I am not from over there, I'm automatically going to be targeted and something can happen to me. So that's a really big issue, like, for me. I was in the Dominican Republic about a year ago, and I had to physically and mentally prepare myself for that, right? Because here in New York City, this is where I've lived my entire life after I moved from the Dominican Republic. I'm used to doing everything on my own. I'm very independent. If I want to go anywhere, I can just, like, rent a car, go upstate if I want to. If I want to go on vacation on my own, I can do that. Or like go anywhere in the city on my own. Like, I just like, I'm going over here and nobody has to worry about it. But, you know, when I go back to the Dominican Republic, there's like this huge fear of like, you cannot go over there by yourself. Who are you taking with you? Like, automatically, those are the questions that are asked, which again have a lot to do with, one, you're not from here, and I'm doing air quotes, like, you're not from here. Mm-hmm. And then two, you're a female, you're automatically going to be targeted.
I've experienced that. I mean, I also experienced that a little bit here with just the paranoia of family. And but I do see it as, it's part of it is safety, but a big part of it is, well, you don't know this place. You don't know any of, and I grew up going to DR every summer. So mm-hmm. I know some of it, and I can get around a little bit, but it's this idea that you don't understand, you're not from here, so we're going to guide you through this. And it almost makes me feel like a tourist in a place that's supposed to be my own.
Yeah.
But it's a reminder that for me, as someone that is first generation American, it's not. They're very quick to remind you of sometimes when you do criticize the Dominican Republic or criticize certain things or point out things that are not necessarily in their benefit or in our benefit as a society. And mm-hmm. but because there's this idea that you don't totally fully understand.
Yeah.
And it goes from the micro of don't go on the street by yourself. Yeah. To the macro, we're like, don't have an opinion about how we run our country, ourselves, yeah, our families, because you've already, it's almost like you're American. You of course, yeah, you're gonna have crazy ideas, mm-hmm, because you're with those white people over there.
Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And just to shine a light on that, like, a lot of the times when I was there last summer, I had to bite my tongue multiple times. Like, I saw something, I was like, why? Like, I think I was lucky enough that I was there with, like, my sister and my mom, who already know my character, and I'm, like, pretty quick to, like, say certain things, and, like, my sister would just grab my arm and say, like, do not say anything, don't you dare. Like, she could already see it, like, on my face, which is something that I personally need to now make sure that I have the self-control to, since I'm going over there in the next couple of days. It's like, I need to have the same self-control, I'd say. Because, mm-hmm, again, if I say something, it's like I'm automatically either saying something against someone or pointing the finger or just plain and simple disrespecting someone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's so relatable. And it's interesting, like, when you go back home to travel, I think we see ourselves when we're here as Black or Latinx or whatever. But then when you go over there, it's like, you're American.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You're American. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, when I went to visit St. Vincent last year, I definitely felt very American. And exactly what you described. And also, too, like, with you, it was like, everything that I said, like, I have a tattoo on my wrist. And I remember a family member, like, what is that? Like, why do you have that on your wrist? Like, oh, that's what Americans do. You're just so free over there. I was like, for a tattoo. Because I have a tattoo, I'm free. That makes me American. But
yes.
But it just goes to show, like, it's a completely different culture. And on the other side of it, right, and this idea that the both of you are pointing to, that when you go to the Dominican Republic or you go back home, it's weird because you don't fit in that culture. But then in some ways, when you're here, you also don't fit. And when you're here, and I'll speak on the experience of being a Black, I identify as being a Black American. I was born here, but I have West Indian roots. But when this conversation comes up about slavery in the U.S. and when it comes up about, you know, racism and the context within the United States, I often feel like I don't have a conversation or a part of the conversation because my family did not originate and wasn't a part of the slavery and the abuse and the violence that existed within this country to Black people, but definitely within the Caribbean, yeah, for sure. But when that conversation about, like, Jim Crow laws and all of those things come up, I often don't want to say anything because it's like my ancestors, well, yeah, my family didn't grow up here. They didn't come from this place. So I don't know if you feel that same way when those conversations come up about within the context of the United States, although you are Americans. Yeah. Like, how do you?
I don't have a history here.
Yeah.
I just got here. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no history. I don't have a generation. I don't have a family home that's existed forever. Mm-hmm. I don't. And it does, you know, small things when you're growing up and you don't really, you see this history and there's, of course, different sides to this American history and people are invested in it. And then you're just growing up like, well, I don't know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. I don't have, my family didn't come through the Ellis Island, you know, they didn't like grow up in like Lower East Side or something. And so that, for me, I felt disconnected to both because I didn't have a history here, but I didn't learn about the Dominican history aside from Trujillo, which is like always Trujillo bad. Like that's, and then that's it. And that's all you're supposed to know. And now after we were free and then we weren't free and then now we're free again.
Yeah.
And so that it makes me feel to this day, even now that I'm researching a little bit more about Dominican history and just, I implore all Dominicans that are listening right now to just research your history.
Yes.
100%. Research, because, and there's so many wonderful Dominicans and Dominican organizations that are doing that are putting that history out there because it does help you understand who you are a little bit more. But even though I'm doing that, I still feel like I'm floating, like I'm not anchored to anything because I don't have a rich history here and I don't know enough of the history there.
Yeah, I completely connect with that and agree with you. My mom is the first one of my family to actually move here to the United States. So aside from my mom, for a long time, I didn't have any other like actual like blood relatives live here in the United States. And my mom moved here when like 23 years ago, I think. So like my mom, home is Dominican Republic.
Right.
And like it's not like I can say like, oh, I can go over there and that's where like all my family is. Like, no, you know, right here in the United States, in New York City, I have, you know, like my mom, extended family, chosen family at the end of the day, you know, friends and that. And that's what I look forward to when I say like, oh, my family, this is, you know, what we have built here. Mm-hmm. And then when it comes to history, I agree 100% with what you just said, Kisaida, that I didn't know anything about Dominican history, not anything, but my knowledge was very limited when I moved to the United States, that people were talking about like Trujillo and Las Hermanas Mirabal. Mm-hmm. And I knew some, but I just didn't know. So I had to do a lot of like research on my own, having conversations with people, reading books, and just like, you know, going on an internet hunt for some sort of history or information that I can say, like, oh, I connect to that. So, yes, I'm going to echo what you just said, Kisara, like, definitely research your history and learn and educate yourself on that. And I mean, I still have a lot to learn myself. I'm not an expert, but definitely take ownership of that, because that's the only thing that we have at the end of the day.
And so, Julia, you're actually going to be going to the Dominican Republic in a few days.
Yes.
And you're going alone. So how do you do that, right? If what both of you are saying is that you don't feel totally connected to this country, how do you travel within a country that you don't, like, you're unfamiliar? Like, to me, that's, like, I'm getting anxiety just thinking about it.
Wow.
But also traveling without family, too, because something that we've talked about, Julia, is that when you travel with family back home, like, a lot of your trip is dictated by them. It's like, don't go here, and we're not going to go over there because I don't like her. And,
you know.
So, yeah, talk to us, talk to the people about that.
So, what I would say, like, the preface of going alone, I'm going to say alone in air quotes, because I am the only person from my family here in the United States that's actually traveling to the DR right now. However, there's a lot of family in the Dominican Republic. So what I mean, like, I'm traveling alone is, I guess I would have a lot more diction on, like, where I get to go and where I don't get to go. But I have, my uncle is picking me up at the airport when I get there.
Hola, tío.
And I've already, like, been able to make you know, reach out to a few family members, just saying, like, hey, I'm going to be over there. Like, we should get together. And just in my plan of my trip, it's like I'm traveling through the country, but in the, while at the same time, kind of like visiting some family members in between. I mean, I'll have more autonomy on, like, what I get to do and where I get to go. But I am sure that people are going to be freaking out with, where are you going? Who are you going with? You're gonna go by yourself. You must be crazy. Like, I am getting mentally and physically ready for that, because that's going to challenge already my own way of being. So I'm sure I'm gonna be faced with all of that. So wish me luck.
Yes, good luck.
I'll tell you more about it after I come back. But yeah, I think the preface of me, like, being going alone, it's more like I'll have more autonomy on what I get to do. But will I really have more autonomy on what I get to do? We'll see.
Questions I need answers.
Yeah. When I first heard alone, I'm like, but how? Yeah. I'm just thinking about myself trying to go to DR alone. They'd be like, no, I'm going to the capital. Oh, you have a cousin there. It's like, okay, I'm going to Santiago. Oh, you have aunts there. I'm like, okay, I'm going to go to Puerto Plata. Oh, I know someone. Yes. Yeah, there. Yes,
exactly.
There's always someone. Yes. And then I'll be like, okay, well, I'll go to IT. I was like, I know somebody there too.
Yeah.
You'll never, ever be alone.
Exactly. Like, there will always be eyes watching you. And I'm sure that people are going to be, like, texting me all the time. Yeah. Like, hey, are you okay? Please let us know. And my mom is already like, you have to make sure that you text me every day and let me know that you're okay. Aww. So, like, she's the overprotective Dominican mom. Like, well, all Dominican moms are very overprotective, I would say.
All of them. And the aunts.
Yes, everyone. So I'm sure, like, all eyes will be on me.
I think that's nice, though, that you can go someplace and travel just in case if something goes wrong, you know where to go to if you absolutely need to, you know, and that there's someone back in the States who is checking on you. But I'm sure it can feel overbearing. It's like, can I enjoy myself?
And don't let you travel to, like, a small town, like El Campo, because everyone will know. Like, at these, and it's like the little villages, they'll know who, like, the person that's, like, in the shops, they'll know the butcher, they'll know the person.
Yes,
like, every single person they know who your mom is, they know who your dad is, they know everything.
Your aunts and uncles, when you were born, the time, how, like, what you waited
when you graduated. Yeah. They probably have a picture of you.
Yes. I wouldn't put it past them.
They probably also have hand-me-downs too from
they're like
sending barrels and stuff.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, I think that's beautiful. I think that's where I feel the most connected, when I have my family, even though they're also really trying to control me in some way. But when I know that I'm part of a community that extends from one country to another, that feels beautiful, and I feel anchored in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then it goes away. But then
Like a push and pull type of thing. Yeah.
So we've also talked about, when we've sat down and talked about, you know, your experiences, we often, something that came up was beauty.
Oh.
And you know, Kisara, you mentioned like your mother being overbearing and all up in your love life, all up in
everything.
Yeah. And everything.
From A through Z.
Also, my hair was her hair until like maybe 20.
Yes.
My hair was.
What did she tell you about your hair?
Oh, I could not. I could not cut my hair unless she allowed me to cut my hair. I couldn't straighten my hair until she thought it was the right time to straighten my hair. Yeah. Her hair was my hair, and my hair was her hair. I'm sure there's a deeper psychological reason for those things, but when you're growing up and you're just like, what should I do with... When can I do something? Like, I wanted bangs once, and I really wanted them really bad. And my mom was like, no, you're not going to get bangs, because apparently cutting long hair is just a no-no. Mm. Your hair should be as long as possible. For what reason? I don't know. But
well, for men, of course.
Oh, yes, that thing.
You have to get a husband.
For men.
No, because the beauty standards are that you have to have, you know, well-combed, lush, you know, straight, long hair at all times, 24/7, even in the pool.
Yeah.
Even in the pool. Just saying.
In the pool, for sure. Like,
straight. If your hair is curly, it needs to be straightened. How does that work?
You need to figure that out, but...
Wow.
What needs to happen? You're not getting in the pool.
Yeah.
Or you're putting your hair up and then like in a bun, and then you're just like, you're not actually swimming.
Or have a shower cap on your head when you're in the pool, because you cannot get it wet. Because you need to look presentable tomorrow when you're going to visit your tios, and they need to make sure that, you know.
Your hair looks nice.
So what does nice, so you mentioned straight, but what does that look like?
White. White is nice. I'm so like,
it's hilarious, but it's real. And
it
is true.
It is real.
What I mean by that is a European leaning standard.
Right. Yes. Right. Yes.
Right. Which
Very
is straight hair.
Straight hair.
Thin nose.
Yeah. Oh, nose.
Yeah. Thin nose. Small mouth, apparently.
That's weird.
Always being quiet.
Yeah.
Following rules. You know, you can't talk back to people.
And it's interesting, because those are the same things that we say about women of color within the United States, that they should ascribe to all of those things. And it's funny, right? Like, all of these ideas about what it means to be a good woman, right, or an acceptable woman, it has translated within all of these cultures. Like, even though the Dominican Republic and the United States are... they're two different countries, but a lot of these themes are seen all over the world, especially this idea about beauty. And like what you said, Kisara, is hilarious, but it's sadly is true. Like, the closer you are to whiteness, the more acceptable you are,
100%.
And the more prepared you are for marriage and what you want your children to look a certain way. You also have to, I don't know if this is something that comes up for you all, but also paying attention to the type of person that you marry or choose to create a life with. Like, that's also like a thing.
Well,
yeah.
piggybacking on what Kisaida said. So I grew up and I've always had, I had curly hair. And when I was about 7 years old, living in the Dominican Republic, I lived with my aunt and my cousins, and they had curly hair like me, and then they decided to relax their hair. So all of a sudden, they have this like really long and straight hair, and I wanted that too. Mm-hmm. So I didn't live with my mom, and I was like over the phone, like, you know, just telling her, please, I want to get my hair straight, please, 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 because I want it like that. Unfortunately, I didn't have anyone else to like tell me any better. So when I was 7 years old, I relaxed my hair, and you know, ever since
the
then,
creamy it was crack.
Ever since then, it was like you have to go to the hair salon every week and, you know, get the wash and set and all the heat and all these other things. Mm-hmm. And after I moved to the United States, it became more of a burden to me than whatever, like, choice. Like, that choice was long gone. I was 11 years old. It was like, why do I have to go to the hair salon every week? Why? And my mom was like, you just need to go to the hair salon every week. And it was like every either Friday or Saturday or Sunday, you would spend 2 to 3 hours in the hair salon getting your hair done, period. And then you would get the doobie, the wrap, and the hair, because you do not need to let the heat damage it, because it needs to look presentable for school the next day, you know, Monday. It needs to look good, or whatever party it is that you were going to that weekend, whatever it was. But for me, it was like, I think it has been a really big struggle, because going to high school here and just seeing a lot of my friends, you know, embrace their curly hair. They would go to the pool and get their hair like wet, and then they would come back with that, their like curly hair, and I'm like, I want that. I want to stop relaxing my hair. And I remember even having that conversation with my mom multiple times, and she would look at me like I had 20 heads. Like, you want to do what? What? And it was just something that you didn't talk about, right? And it wasn't until maybe a few years ago that when the dialogue around curly hair started to change, and you have a lot of people speaking up for, you know, wear your curls, wear your natural hair as it is, embrace that side of you, that I was able to muster up a lot more courage, and actually having the resources and support to be able to say, okay, I'm stopping. I'm not going to be relaxing my hair anymore, and I'm gonna I'm gonna find out what my hair actually looks like. I was super excited. Like, I'm so excited now even talking about it. But one of the first things that my mom said to me was like, you must be crazy. You're gonna leave your hair like that. What would people say? And then here she goes and she calls people in DR, and I have people in DR calling me like, you're gonna do what? But your hair looks really nice.
Like, people were calling you
people,
from DR.
I was talking to my tias from DR, having this conversation about, you're thinking about stopping to relax your hair and like having it straight. Not like a lot, but I definitely had conversations with a lot of people.
It's like breaking news.
Yes. I mean, everything is breaking news for Dominican.
Everything.
Wow.
You have like the aunts and the uncles and everybody calling you, you know, anytime your mom needs some extra support. Yeah. So I think that, like, for me, it has definitely been a big struggle, mostly just finding like my own inner beauty, accepting myself, my hair for what it is. Having my mom telling me, like, when I first cut my hair and like let it curly, like, you're gonna go in the street out like that? Like, please brush your hair. She's like, oh, like, why does your hair look like that? It was hurtful. It was hurtful. Yeah. Like, I didn't want to go out in the street with my hair curly. But my sister also decided to go natural around the same time that I did. So having her, having each other, definitely helped with that support. And again, also going online and like seeing people like Miss Rizos, like Carolina Contreras, who opened the first Dominican curly hair salon. You know, just seeing like all of these advocates speaking up, like, gave me that extra drive that I needed to go, you know, through that. And I am over the moon. It's like the best thing that I could have made, the best thing that I could have done for myself. I love my curly hair. My family still have their comments and, you know, 2 cents to put in about my hair and it being curly and it being, you know, frizzy or whatever. But I think that that has been like a really big side of me where like I went against all of the norms and cultural norms that my family's already used to, with the whole like you need to make sure you go to the hair salon every week. And then last summer was the first time I went to the ER and I had my curly hair and I had a lot of people just give me the side eye and give me the questioning looks and having those conversations about like, you're gonna leave your hair like that, like why don't you brush it, you're gonna go out in the street like that. But again, those were a lot of the spaces where I had to bite my tongue, because if I got into those conversations, I probably would have said some things that I didn't mean, and I probably like would not have gotten anywhere in those conversations. Because culturally, I think that when it comes to us Dominicans, like once we believe something, we swear by it. That's like us. That's our lifestyle, and it's really hard to like come up. Not come up, but it's really hard to like face out of that. And I'm also gonna say I'm very lucky that like at least my mom, like even though sometimes she does still says her comments, she's become a lot more accepting of my hair. But like at the end of the day, it had to come from me. Like I was the one that had to put my foot down and say, yes, this is happening. I am doing this. I don't care what you say or what you don't say. Okay. And also bringing in that like confidence, right? I was beat down time and time again. But a big part of that was just like me embracing it. And again, one of the best decisions I made in my life, to be honest.
You go, girl.
Yay.
And your hair is beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm looking forward to this trip to the ER this summer. Let's see what comes up.
Oh yeah, it does, because I still haven't mustered the courage to not straighten my hair when I go to DR. And it's really more just to avoid conversations and to avoid me getting into an argument with somebody. And I do think that it is changing in terms of hair and like curly hair, but I think the only curly hair salon right now is in the capital.
Yes.
Right? Right. So there's so many. There's like a salon on like on every corner.
Yes.
And anything can be a salon, by the way. Anything.
Yeah.
What does anything. That mean? Like it could be
anything. That's true.
Like just a random little closet that you're there, or just like like someone's like garage someone's
like black patio.
Yeah, you just need a blow dryer, some rolos, and like that's you're done. You're it. So that's
and
how,
a blower.
And a blower, yeah. And you know what? When the light goes out, like there's a generator too.
Yeah.
So because the salon needs to keep going.
Yeah,
that's salon. Intense.
Yes.
And it's funny because I grew up like going to the hair salon and getting my hair straightened, like whatever it is. And if it wasn't straightened, it was like in a braid or something because you couldn't see anything. My hair used to be a lot thicker, but I think just like all the straightening messed it up, because I started leaving my hair curly around maybe when I was 20. No, not 20, maybe like 25 or something like that. Like really starting to figure out how to leave it curly. And then I would straighten it again. And then now I've decided like I'm not straightening. I'm going to figure out what this is without it. And my curls are looser. And my mom, her hair is not curly at all. Like it's just a little wave. And so she didn't understand, because she's like, but it's so easy to straighten your hair. Just do it. Mm. Like she didn't get like why I would want to do it. And I identify so much with what you said, Julia, about just like the little snide comments from like, well, I don't know how you're gonna like get a man like this.
Yep.
To like, you know, why don't you just brush your hair? Just looks, you know, it just looks strange. Just brush it. Just like, it looks so nice when it's in a bun.
Yes. Put in a ponytail.
Yeah. Put it in a ponytail. Put it in. Or just like, do you want me, like, I'll take you to the hair salon. Like, do you need money for it?
I'll take your money.
I will take your money. Thank you very much. I will not. And so it is a lot of disentangling from what my family thinks I should look like and starting to reflect on what do I want to look like? Mm-hmm. I just love the process of leaving my hair curly because it takes more time. It's like I would, granted, like you would be 2 to 3 hours in the hair salon, but, and then there's a level of community in that. Mm-hmm. But when I have to like wash, condition, like, and use all these products and like really like scrunch my hair and go through my hair, maybe deep condition, like all of that is just a way of like loving myself that I didn't understand I could do. Mm-hmm. And that it was fine, that it, mm-hmm. and then the results are like these curls. And I'm like, oh, and these curls that really connect me to my grandmother, who is like, who never let her hair, like she had curly hair and she would never, this woman was like almost 90 years old in rolos and dyeing her hair.
Yep.
Because that's how she felt beautiful. And I think it's a deeper sort of, the remnants of colonization, I think, and like this imperial force that's in you and that's like that's deeply seated, where you feel beautiful if your hair is straightened, if you you're not in the sun too much, if you like, if people don't, if you could pass in some way or another. And so my grandmother wasn't necessarily like that. My grandmother, you know, had a darker complexion, had very curly hair, and so like this was the way for her to just feel beautiful, and I can't knock that. Like that's how she survived.
Yeah.
And then she had kids of all shades, and then she had my mother, who is also more like, I would think my mother is, I would consider her a Black woman. She would consider herself an India, but like that's neither here. No, that's a different conversation. But she had this daughter that was tall and this beautiful, like long wavy hair, and like. And it was just another sense of beauty that she's like, oh, look, I did this. This is what beauty should be. Wow. And then my mom was like, well, why don't you look like me? Because I'm so light skinned, they called me yellow, which I don't know if you ever.
I haven't really been given any
Jojota
names. No.
Yeah.
Wow. I haven't. I think most of the names that I've heard in my family say is like, calling someone that's darker, like Prieto.
Yeah.
Or there's like a handful of names. I don't even want to go into it, but most of them are very derogatory. And it all stems from skin color or, you know.
Yeah. And it's just try to place you, really, which is another remnant of colonization. Trying to place you. We have so many layers of colorism that goes from like blanco to negro, and then it's just like everything in the middle.
Yeah.
And so, and it goes from like India to like India fina, India clara, India, like all of these things. And hair is a way to like, if your complexion is darker but you have like not curly hair, then that's a way to like, you're like in a category.
Place you in the spectrum. And either you fit in or not. Like that's pretty much what it amounts to.
So thank you to you both. That was awesome. I always love to end the show with some takeaways. So if we can quickly just say, you know, what do we take away from the conversation we had today?
You're not alone. That's what I would say, to be honest. There's a lot of people out there that you know, including us, you know, Kisaira mm-hmm. and I didn't meet each other till maybe like a month ago, and we have so many things in common. Mm-hmm. So, you know that you're not alone, and that you never know what the person next to you is going through, maybe something similar. And at the end of the day, we're all human. We are all here to live an extraordinary life. And what we can do is actually join in the next person and, you know, support each other through our journeys, regardless of what journey that is. Because you may be able to find like a sister or a brother or another mm-hmm. family member along the way. That's my takeaway.
Wow, that's so beautiful. That was beautiful. I can't go after that. My takeaway
is you can.
Yes, you can go.
This was great. So good. I'm leaving here feeling supported and nourished and knowing that that you're not alone, and that there's so much movement happening to rectify some things that we've learned before or some ways of being that weren't helpful for us or for anybody, and that we're really, as Dominicans, as Caribbeans, we're really like coming more into our own and knowing that our own is a spectrum. It could mm-hmm. like I love to see Caribbeans, I love to see Dominicans in every form, in every way. Yeah. And I didn't really get that until I moved to New York, but just to see that and to know that it's happening, these conversations are happening mm-hmm. here and in other places, I just take away so much hope from today. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you both. I definitely agree with the sentiment that we, you know, we're connected, you know, even though we're all Black, we just got mm-hmm. off of different stops on the boat.
Yeah, I agree. And also, if these conversations are not happening, like, use this as the way to spark that conversation, to start that conversation. This is not the entire dialogue. There's many things that we mm-hmm. left out or we didn't have the time to say.
Right.
But use this to spark those conversations at home, at dinner, mm-hmm. you know, with the family members, because it's important to be having these conversations. And you know, some people may get hurt, some people's feelings may get hurt, but you know, just have a safe space to have these conversations, just have them safely.
Very cool. Check your people.
Check.
That's how we heal, that's how we liberate each other.
Amen.
Yes.
Okay, thank you both. Your Dominican cards have remained intact.
Yes.
hopefully no one takes it away.
I'm just kidding. Dominicans. Wait, what? Dominicans come in every shade, every size, every culture, everything. So thank you both for being so awesome and being yourselves.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for listening. Again, if you want to continue the conversation, please make sure you comment wherever you listen to this podcast. Also like and subscribe. And yeah, just keep having these conversations. Thank you so much. So talk soon. Bye.
Bye.